Welcome to Filmstrip. These podcasts are spoiler-filled as we discuss the plots, characters, and themes of the films in review. All content used or discussed in these podcast episodes is the property of the respective owners and used under the Fair Use Act, Section 504, C2, Title 17.
Welcome to Filmstrip. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Brian.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Anthony.
And this is our review of National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, starring Chevy Chase, Beverly D'Angelo, Johnny Galecki, Juliette Lewis, John Randolph, Diane Ladd, E.G. Marshall, Doris Roberts, Nicholas Guest, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Randy Quaid. Written by John Hughes, directed by Jeremiah S. Chechik, released in 1989 on a $25 million budget, grossed $73 million at the box office, and is a certified classic for the holidays. So let's start with some backgrounds. Anthony, welcome back. Let me introduce you first. If we have any new listeners, Anthony is with us. Do you want to tell us about your background with the movie? And feel free to plug your podcast while you're here.
Sure. So first of all, my podcast is called Tis the Podcast. It's an year-round Christmas movie podcast. We do delve into Halloween for 2 months a year. Ron and Lindsay just took part in a massive 6-hour Halloween bracket episode. That was our highest ever downloaded episode, actually, for the show. So congratulations, you two.
Nicely done.
Hey, thanks.
So my history with this, I actually didn't see this movie until college. I was aware of it growing up, but growing up, I was into more of the fantastical stuff, not so much the family zaniness. But when I finally saw it in college, thanks to a girlfriend, I fell in love with it. And it's become a must-watch annually since then. It is not only a classic Christmas movie, it's just a classic movie. It's one of my favorite comedies of all time. And yeah, I mean, it's a pop culture phenomenon, right? Like, my office this year hasn't been doing well. Just the other day in the break room, everyone was joking about how our bonuses are going to be Jelly of the Month membership. So, yeah, it's fantastic.
It's hard to watch this movie if your bonuses have been nixed. I've been there. Man, It hits a little too close to home.
I feel like I could top that one of all of us here, potentially. But you don't yeah. need to go down that rabbit hole.
But this is definitely one of those movies I quote like year-round, too. It's just so freaking quotable.
Oh, yeah. How can you not?
Yeah, exactly.
What in the hell is a bonus?
Well, I'll tell you, it's when your company sells for $33 million, so the CEO gives you a $20 gift card to the restaurant across the street.
Is that a true story?
That's his Swear true story, yeah.
Oh my God, and I thought I had it bad. I'm so sorry.
Wait, it gets better, and then I had to go to HR to sign off on receiving it so that they could have it for tax purposes.
Wow, nice. Yep.
Well, I hope that dinner was worth it.
Yeah, I could afford an appetizer in Northern Virginia with that, so it was great. Good plate of nachos.
I hope everyone listening has better Christmas bonus experiences than we've had in the past. Well, Brian, since you mention it, what's your background with this movie?
Well, I grew up watching this movie. This was an absolute classic in our house. I remember very early on, you know, kind of gathering around the TV with my family. I've got three siblings, two great parents, and we watched it at least once a year, normally closer to Christmas time because our household was a little more strict than Anthony's. We were mostly watching Christmas movies in December. We didn't start Christmas music until after Thanksgiving, but this is one of our favorites. It'll regularly get quoted throughout the year. And, you know, it's just not Christmas without seeing it at least once. And ever since being with Lindsay, at least three times. So I absolutely love this movie.
Ron, what about you?
Oh, much like Brian said, it's kind of a family tradition. We watched it pretty much every December when I was a kid growing up. Now that I am an old man with a family of my own. We watch it every December or late November, depending on if I have to be prepared for a podcast or not. And just my general mood. We also watch it for Christmas in July. Because when we do Christmas in July, it's a good Christmas in July movie, because you get all those scenes of the family around the pool, and not that we have a pool, but you know, sweltering summer weather lends itself to that, to the fantasy of being able to afford a pool one day, which will never happen. But that's fine. But you know, it's just, yeah, it's one of those movies that I don't remember much about life before it, but I do remember them getting the VHS tape and watching it in 1990, I want to say, like, was the first Christmas it was out on VHS, and, mm-hmm. and getting the VHS rental and watching it, and then getting it for several years after that. So nothing too world shattering, but you know, I have my Marty Moose mug and I'm ready to go.
So I have to ask you, Ron, when you are daydreaming about the underwear model in your fake pool, who is the model?
Yeah, hopefully you're just as lucky.
Christy Brinkley. Oh, no, that's Jay's.
Usually my daydreams are of me, like, plunging my head into the pool and then whipping my beard back in slow motion like I'm the model. But
like,
you know,
like a Suave commercial.
Ron, yeah.
Ron's exactly. The model in his own fantasy.
Exactly. Ron, I mean,
Ron, you're like an inch away from being in those mermaid male calendars where it's a guy with a beard.
I could see you as King Triton.
Yeah, I'm working on it. You know, it gets a little grayer every year, so I'll be there shortly.
Now, Ron, you sent, I don't think I ever clarified this, but you sent an interesting text that said, I'm not allowed to watch Christmas Vacation yet, unless it's our next podcast. So then we told you it was going to be our next podcast and you watched it. Was that like I need to know how that conversation went down.
Well, after we watched European Vacation, I talked to my wife and I was like, at least this is how I think it went down. I'll be honest. I don't remember much of anything about anything ever, but that's how I've survived this long. But I remember it being like, we watched European Vacation for the podcast and I was like, all right, we get to watch. I said, Holly, hey, you want to watch Christmas Vacation? Mm-hmm. Like, it's still a little early. Cause it was, you know,
cause it wasn't even Thanksgiving yet.
No, it wasn't even Thanksgiving at that point. And she was like, no, it's still too early. I was like, well, I think I'm going to have to watch it for the podcast. So maybe we can sneak it in like the day Thanksgiving night or the day after Thanksgiving. And we did.
It just sounds like a move that I would pull, like, ooh, yeah, I know it's kind of early, but well, I gotta watch it for the podcast.
That's because me and Ron's wife are right. You know, you got to time these things. You want to have much, and you still want it to really hit that spot for you.
It's the first viewing and then you have to have a second and the third.
See, my wife just rolls her eyes and goes in the other room.
So it's me and the wives.
No. Oh, man. Now, my background's pretty similar to everyone else's. I've been watching it as long as I can remember. It's my dad's, I think, probably favorite movie, too. He quotes it all the time, to the T, every day of the year. Via text, on the phone, in person, doesn't matter. So I love this movie. I'm on record as saying it's one of my favorite movies of all time, and I stand by that. So, Ron, are you ready to razzle-dazzle us with a plot summary before we get too deep into this?
I am not, but I'm going to try to fake it anyway. It's going to be – if I razzle and dazzle anyone, it's because of lowered expectations. The kind that Clark Griswold does not have. Clark Griswold wants to have a great Christmas, and he will get that great Christmas at any price, whether it means driving out with his family to the middle of nowhere to saw down the biggest tree that he could possibly find, only to realize he didn't bring a saw, only to realize that his daughter had frozen about halfway through the trip. Clark is one of those guys who's always out for the perfect whatever it is, and that's been established throughout the other vacation movies thus far, right? So he wants the ultimate family road trip for the summer. He wants the ultimate European vacation. And whether or not his family actually wants this doesn't actually matter. His Clark's going to get it one way or the other, which is really funny because that seems to be how the holidays really start working. Now, Clark has this idea of a great, perfect family holiday where all sides of the family get together. They all stay under one roof. And if you've ever lived with a mother-in-law or had your grandmother live with your family or had any kind of extended family stay over for a long period of time, you realize that is absolutely not going to work. However, Clark, being the eternal optimist, determines to power through no matter what, whether it's his family's constantly arguing with each other, having, what is it, 8 or 9 people under the roof at one time of, admittedly, it's a big house, but, you know, it's not that big. Or the greatest problem any homeowner can have, having the house all decorated for Christmas and the friggin' Christmas lights won't work. That takes up a big portion of this movie as Clark bumbles and fumbles his way through the Christmas lights, probably to avoid his own family, possibly to hang out with his son, Rusty, or maybe just because it's part of the perfect Griswold family Christmas that he has dreamed up in his head. One good thing about Clark, though, is he doesn't give up, even when he probably should. About the time Clark gets his lights working, his whole world gets shifted upside down because guess who shows up in the quote-unquote tenement on wheels? Cousin Eddie, two of his kids, and his wife, Catherine. And also their very special guest, Snots the Rottweiler. Because, of course, Eddie's going to have a snotty Rottweiler as a pet.
Pride and joy.
As it turns out, Eddie's somehow fallen on even harder times than when we saw him in Vacation because he doesn't own the worm farm anymore. He had to get rid of it. His family are living out of the RV. They're broke, and they have no gifts for their kids for Christmas. So Clark offers to step up, be the good guy, and help out Eddie's kids so they can have a nice holiday. Meanwhile, Clark's Aunt Bethany, who is probably senile, and his cantankerous Uncle Lewis show up just to complete the great family Christmas. Now, Clark, in case the talk of bonuses didn't give it away at the top of the show, Clark is depending heavily on a bonus to complete the perfect family Christmas gift, a giant in-ground pool in his backyard. However, that bonus keeps not arriving. And it's already Christmas Eve. As if the not arriving bonus wasn't enough, the Christmas Eve dinner goes disastrously wrong. Aunt Bethany, who wrapped her cat up as a gift, which I would like a cat as a gift, but most people wouldn't. The cat gets electrocuted because of chewing on the cords. Uncle Lewis accidentally burns down the family Christmas tree with his what looks like a terrible cigar. When the long-awaited Christmas bonus arrives, it turns out not to be an actual money bonus, the kind that would keep the family from, you know, going into debt, bouncing a check, that kind of financial hardship that people don't recover from. It's a jelly of the month club. Pushed to his limit, Clark finally snaps and angrily wishes for Frank to be delivered to his house in one of the greatest insult scenes of all time. While Clark rampages around the house, Eddie disappears. I think you can guess where this is going. Eddie shows back up with Frank Shirley tied up. Frank's wife calls the police. And then in a scene straight out of another Chicagoland movie, the Blues Brothers, a SWAT team breaks into the Griswolds' house and holds everyone at gunpoint. Frank decides not to press charges when everyone realizes that cutting out the Christmas bonus is kind of a dick move. And you think that's going to be great, right? Frank's changed his mind. Clark's going to get a bonus. Everyone's going to be very happy, right? Pretty good. However, there's one last thing to happen. Uncle Lewis, standing out in the front yard, tosses his match into the gutter, and boom, the sewage that Eddie had been dumping into the storm drain from his tenement on wheels explodes. Clark's Santa Claus decoration goes flying through the air on fire. Aunt Bethany starts singing the Star Spangled Banner, and everyone joins in for a happy Christmas moment as credits roll.
Ta-da!
That was about as tortured as Clark's neighbors. But, I got through it okay.
Next time you're on Tis the Podcast, John, you're doing all the summaries.
Oh, well, you know, if you're willing to let me sit for 20 or 30 minutes and write it while the show's supposed to be recording, that's perfect.
Straight from the heart.
What a razzle dazzle. Yeah. Man, oh man. So the perfect Christmas. Well, I have a very important question first that I want to kick us off with.
Should we say grace?
Yes. Grace died 30 years ago.
So fun fact, Chevy Chase is now as old as Aunt Bethany was in this movie.
Oh my gosh.
Oh no.
You're right.
Oh.
but he's a lot less likable.
Yeah. I was about to say he's just as senile.
So I had this discussion with Brian. I don't know. I might have mentioned it to Ron and Jay too. Of all the vacation movies, which set of Griswold kids are your favorite?
These ones. Easily for me. Mm. I love Johnny Galecki as Rusty more than any of the other boys.
Yeah. I think you might, but Vegas Vacation kids, I think, were fun too. But the dynamic between the two in this movie makes them my favorite, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think they're just super relatable, right? In how he had to share the bed with his sister, and it was like, oh my God, Bob, yeah. Have you ever had to? You know, these are just common things that you hear around this time of year in a lot of American households where relatives are coming in to stay for the holidays or just coming in to visit for a little bit. I'm sure I remember being displaced and, you know, sleeping somewhere different and missing my bed because he had to give it up. But it's all part of it. It's part of the tradition. And you got to do it. It's a rite of passage. But that, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the way their dynamic, I think, made them most relatable, you know, to a lot of ways that I remember growing up. And I think maybe that's why I too share in the same that these are my favorite set of kids that they had in all the vacation movies. And I think you nailed it. I think it was because of the dynamic.
And we just watched pretty much all of the vacation movies, right?
Yeah, we did.
That was going to be my question after Ron answers this question. I was going to say, rank the vacation movies. I'd be curious.
I got Ron. Ron, what's yours?
What about the kids?
Yeah.
I really like the Vegas Rusty. Him having that lucky streak in that movie is one of the funnier subplots of that movie because he's like the reverse clerk. And then he's the one who actually bails the family out of all their issues in the end of Vegas Vacation, rather than, you know, Clark somehow fumbling his way through things. I thought that was a nice change, but it's hard to top Johnny Galecki and Juliet Lewis, not just because I've seen Juliet Lewis's band play at the Warped Tour.
Really?
Yeah, Juliet Lewis and the Licks.
Nice.
Yeah, she's pretty good. They're fun. These kids fit the family Christmas vibe more, I think, than the other possible kids do. And, you know, one of them was one of the biggest stars on TV for years. And the other was in Natural Born Killers. It's hard to beat that combination.
So this is the only vacation movie where where Rusty and Clark do not have a heart to heart scene. In the oral history of this movie, Johnny Galecki says Chevy Chase approached him on set and was like, hey, do you want to like do a scene? We can write one together. I can go to the script writers. And he's like, no, I think the script works better without it. And he said, looking back now, I just, you know, shot myself in the foot and didn't do a one-on-one with this comedic legend. But yeah.
But then he got to be in Big Bang Theory. So, you know, it worked out. Yeah.
Still never had his one-on-one with Chevy Chase, though.
That's true.
Honestly, I feel like him and Rusty spend enough time together that they didn't really need the heart-to-heart scene.
Yeah,
because it's kind of spread out throughout the process of torturing Clark with lights.
Yeah. I feel like the heart-to-heart kind of happened behind the scenes in the house decorating, like the light stuff where you have to untangle the giant ball of lights, which... Does every parent make their kid do that? Because I had to do that. I definitely remember doing that when I was a little kid. Is it Ron? Is your kid old enough yet to untangle the lights for you?
She is not.
She's almost there.
but by this time next year, she will be untangling lights for me. No
doubt. My parents were always just bougie and got different lights every year because they didn't want to put up with untangling them. So they would just toss them and buy new ones.
I considered that.
There was something to be said. There's a giant plastic bin in the loft in our garage, which, you know, kind of looked like 10 pounds of crap in a 5 pound bag. And still to this day, it kind of does. But it would come down and it always kind of looked like it was organized. And, you know, there'd be little plastic baggies for each one. And somehow everything would just come out as this tangled mess that always took longer. And I don't know, but somehow always at least a third of these things would go bad. And then we'd have to run out to the store to replace them, only to find that we didn't get enough. So then we had to go back out. But by the time you go back out, a lot of the stores that you were buying it at are sold out because everybody got them already. And we normally ended up doing it at night. And we got smarter when we got a little bit older and hit college, because that's when the schnapps started getting poured with the hot chocolate, because we would do it at night.
Nice.
So I do have a couple of great memories of doing that with my brothers and sister and getting that set up. But I think everybody has to go through it at least one time, or at least be involved in it at some capacity. If we're not as lucky as Anthony is here, where his parents obviously love him and they get new lights every year.
Well, I was about to say, even though I didn't go through the untangling thing, I think we've all been through trying to find the one light that's causing the whole strand to not work.
Yeah. Didn't your family just pay people to do that for you, Anthony?
That's what they do now, and that's because they're older.
No judgment. No judgment.
No, that's smarter. That's just smarter.
Ron judges. I can see it in his eyes.
It's not judgment. It's jealousy, because that sounds great.
We have neighbors who definitely hire professionals to decorate their houses. You can tell. It does look nice.
Average price, by the way, I heard this on the radio, is anywhere from $2,500 to $4,500 to get that done. I'm sorry, $2,800 to $4,500 in our area. Have your lights done.
I think I'll keep the money and do them myself. Well, you do them, so I'd rather keep the money and have you do them.
She'll keep the hot chocolate with the schnapps coming your way.
Right, yeah.
All right, Anthony, you asked to rank the vacation movies. You want to go first? Or last?
Yeah, so I'll go first. So okay. Christmas Vacation.
Number one.
Yep. Then maybe controversial, Vegas Vacation. Then European Vacation, then the original Vacation.
Wow. I'm
surprised. I don't think you're going to find that as controversial as you think.
That hurts.
Okay.
I'll go next. Christmas Vacation. I'm exactly the same. Christmas Vacation, Vegas Vacation. Oh, no. I think I like the regular Vacation better than European Vacation. I'm trying to remember. Do you remember?
I'm pretty sure you like the original better than European Vacation.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Because we watched that after European Vacation because I realized I hadn't seen it yet. So, yeah, I'm going to go Christmas Vacation, Vegas Vacation, regular Vacation, European Vacation.
Come on, Ron. Give them the correct order.
Well, the correct order is Christmas Vacation 2, Cousin Eddie's Island Adventure.
Oh, no.
Blew it right out of the gate.
That's not true at all. I don't think I've ever seen that one. But,
no, we started watching it and after 10 minutes decided to stop.
It's unwatchable.
But Christmas Vacation, regular Vacation, Vegas Vacation and European Vacation.
Boom. Oh. I'm gonna echo that exactly. That is the correct order right there.
It's all because of the scene where park's closed. Moose out front should have told you. That is one of the things that I've used the most. One of the things my family has used the most throughout our many summer vacations. There would always be some sort of vacation riff where we would go to a thing that's supposed to be open and it's closed, and someone would say, "Oh, Moose out front should have told you."
That's great. I'll always associate Holiday Road with a good looking blonde and a red Ferrari. You know, I just anytime you hear that, whether it's a part of a commercial or a cameo in a show, It just goes hand in hand as much as, you know, some of the scenes from Christmas Vacation. I don't want to, you know, spoil them just yet, but
in European Vacation, we get Beverly D'Angelo's striptease on old fashioned camcorder that goes viral in Europe before the internet existed.
Yeah, but in regular Vacation, we get actual nudity.
Boom. That's also true.
Actual nudity trumps almost nudity.
Mm-hmm. And I think Christmas Vacation, we brought this up, is the only one that doesn't have nudity in it.
Which I think is part of the reason this is so popular, because families can sit down and watch it together.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, it's perfect. So,
I mean, yeah, that too.
I mean, you could have added boobs in there and it would have still been perfect.
I mean,
children, but
I'll settle for the implied boobage. And
it was tasteful side boob we got.
I'll also settle for his amazing monologue at the store about it being a bit nipply
outside. Look, Russ, no line.
Well, you're wearing your coat. All right. Now that we've ranked everything, our favorite kids and our favorite vacation movies, let's get into the nitty gritty, folks. Let's start with the family trip to get the tree. It's got to start in the station wagon. Beverly D'Angelo has to sing something. And away they go. She does have a great voice. We talked on our European podcast about how she is actually a very accomplished singer. And Chevy Chase is great. I love the kids in the back of the station wagon too, just like rolling their eyes at everything.
Chevy Chase is me in this scene, and the kids are my wife, because this is me around the holidays belting it out while we drive. She's just sitting there very annoyed in the front seat.
Oh man. Have you guys all been to cut down your own Christmas tree before? Yeah. We all had that experience at some point. Ron, you have not.
Ron, I'm shocked. You're the most woodsman looking out of all of us.
Yeah. How does that work?
I'm more of the wear a flannel shirt and drink an IPA type of woodsman. Well, I live in a city. I'd have to drive like 45 minutes to an hour to get to a Christmas tree farm to cut down a Christmas tree. And I don't want to go to Indiana. No one wants to go to Indiana.
Okay. Pass. You get a pass just because of Indiana.
I mean, my wife is Canadian, so we literally, when we go up to spend Christmas up there with her family, it's just all woods in the backyard. Her dad gives me a saw and we trek out into the woods. It's not even a farm. You just trek through the hills to find one.
Is it an actual handsaw? So you really have to.
Oh, yeah. It's a handsaw. Yep.
No, Bush League. You have to bring. What did we bring last time?
I brought a sawzall.
Yeah.
Nice. That's awesome.
Made things so much easier.
Helped out three other dads that were out there getting yelled at by their wives for not doing it fast enough or getting tips and points.
Kids pointers. Were crying.
Well, I mean, it wasn't bad, but I mean, there were other people like yelling like, oh, you should do it this way. And I just, you know, offered them the saw and they would cut it down in a few seconds. So I feel I saved a couple other Christmases.
I have been Audrey in this scenario, though, like literally frozen, eyeballs frozen open, can't feel my toes. It's the worst. I think I was Audrey in most of this movie at some point in my life.
I am definitely, and I'm curious to see if Lindsay or Brian is with me on this because they're in Jersey. I'm New York, Jersey, so that's not an insult. I definitely drive like Clark Griswold, the finger and cutting off people who are cutting me off. That scene resonated with me.
It's called driving with a purpose, and that's how you're supposed to drive.
Thank you.
Ron, is that how you drive?
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily just a New York, New Jersey thing, because that was the way I used to drive. But now, once I got the Challenger, I slowed way down because I saw how cops would look at me when I was driving, and I realized this is asking for problems I don't want and can't afford.
That's fair.
But maybe they were looking at you thinking, that's a sweet beard that guy's got.
However, well, I will say, saying that, I don't speed anymore, but I have flipped off cops on occasion. They were coming the wrong way down a one-way street, having left the pizza place that they'd been eating lunch at.
Jokes.
And like, we're doing like 45 in like a 25 alley. So I'm going the right way down the street and I have to swerve to the side of the road so they can, or to the side of the alley so they can roar past me. And they got the double freedom rockets for that one. And I also yelled
the double freedom rockets.
And I also yelled some unpleasant things out the window at them about, you know, eyesight, parentage, and whatnot.
I will say, I think that what isn't New Jersey, New York about Clark Griswold's driving is his complete skill for being oblivious on the road. Because I got to say, this might be the most unbelievable scene for me. And the whole movie is just straight up not even realizing you're going right underneath a truck. I know that at least we drive with purpose around here. You know, I can't speak for other places. But I think of all the scenes in the movie, for me, that's the one that I'm like, how did he not see it? You know, not the thing going in the air or lighting the gas fire. It was absolutely sliding underneath the truck for me that I just could not. There's no way. There's no way.
Maybe it's a Chicago thing.
Yeah, could be. Drives with purpose and is also oblivious at the same time. Though I've seen New Jersey drivers do the same thing. That is an asshole thing.
Look,
every state that listens to us.
It's everyone else's job to get out of my way. That's how it works in Chicago.
I will say, though, this is my second most least believable scene in the movie. We'll get to my most unrealistic scene later on.
Well, Ron, I know you haven't cut down your own tree, but have you picked out a tree, like a real live tree, or have you always done like fake trees?
We did that for a few years when I was younger. So we did at least go to a tree lot and buy a tree. So I've had the Sesame Street, Christmas on Sesame Street thing of buying a tree from Grover, not from actual Grover, but you know, I wish.
Well, every tree lot or cutting a tree down, my perception of how large a tree actually is when it's in your house is non-existent. So I think I'll look at a tree and think, oh, it looks a little small, but that's okay. And then get it home and it is a gigantic fat tree.
A little full, a lot of sap.
It is a little full and a lot of sap.
We pulled that one last year.
I was about to say, until I cut down my first real tree in Canada, I never realized how realistic the scene with Clark and the sappy fingers is. I could not believe how covered in it everything? I was.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, man, it's everywhere. I had a similar experience recently. I don't remember what it was. I was cooking or something, and it literally, like, everything I touched, like, just stuck. Awful. Awful. But they get it on the car.
Mm-hmm.
They get it on the car, and they get it home. And he must have done a lot of trimming off camera to make it fit. After, of course, we can't forget to mention the where are you going to put that thing?
Bend over and I'll show you
where we first meet the neighbors. Yeah.
They're
snooty neighbors.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Does anybody know what was that chainsaw mask he had on? Was
that's
that like
a Jason mask?
That's Jason.
Yeah, it's like a hockey mask.
Yeah, it's a hockey mask.
Because my chainsaw didn't come with one of them. So I was curious.
That's because I just maybe this year for Christmas.
Got it. Okay.
Well, here's the thing. Did you buy your hockey mask or did you buy your chainsaw in Virginia or did you buy it in Jersey?
Jersey.
No, I got a real Jersey chainsaw.
Oh, see, then I don't know why they
then it
didn't
should have
the
come
mask.
With a mask.
Yeah,
right?
No, it's not electric.
Oh, man. So, Todd and Margo.
I love how they're the stereotypical yuppie neighbors.
I know.
Yes.
And they're hilarious.
Yeah, talk about like the unsung heroes of this movie. Like
they are the unsung heroes of this movie.
But what's funny is you could from a writing perspective, lift them out, and the movie doesn't really change the plot of Clark trying to have the perfect Christmas, but they add so much humor to it, you would lose so much not having them.
See, I think I gotta disagree. I think the movie without Todd and Margot would actually be pretty difficult, because I think it elevates Clark Griswold's character, first off, with showing how ridiculous they are when you compare them to the neighbors like Todd and Margot. Also, it's kind of, you don't get his outlook on others, even as close as people that are his next door neighbors, without them being there. So you do kind of get to see the blowout appeal from Clark when everything's going on, or when something just totally impacts you as a neighbor, but you might not even be a part of everything that's going on. And I think they're kind of there to show like the impact of others around you who aren't directly involved, and what can happen, whether it's personal questions or the lucky landing of an icicle out of a gutter. You never know.
That's a totally fair point. You changed my mind.
Yeah, I feel like Clark needs an antagonist. If only Clark needs an antagonist, and we need kind of an audience.
I mean, Cousin Eddie is kind of an antagonist. In fairness, Devil's Advocate.
Is it him or Shirley?
Well, we don't get enough of Shirley. We don't get enough of Shirley, I think, to be a full-on antagonist. I feel like we just get multiple. I feel like Clark just has antagonists all around him, regardless of where he's going and what he's doing. Like, there's always someone to pit him against. And I feel like that's you needed someone to pit against Clark while he's spending half the movie, you know, putting up Christmas lights. And it can't just be Clark versus himself. Like, you need someone grounded to have Clark and the Griswold family's general wackiness bounce off of, I think.
Agreed.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah. And I think every family, every person, maybe not every person, but there's multiple antagonists in every family. Like, every situation could have any number of different antagonists, and they'll change. And sometimes it's just really tiny, and sometimes it's ongoing and ongoing, like the mother-in-law, not my mother-in-law, Clark's mother-in-law. My mother-in-law is an angel. The lottery with that one.
Clark's mother-in-law, Doris Roberts, who always plays the mother-in-law from hell.
Yes. Yeah. But she's so good at it, though.
She is. She really cornered that market.
I love the burp when she's drinking. You guys know when they're standing outside.
Yeah, she's drinking. She's like,
what a waste of time. And then she burps. And I don't know if that actually happened, but it's so perfect for her character. It just feels really on brand for that.
I think what makes this movie so good, besides the humor, is it gives me legitimate stress in how much I can relate to it. Like, the scene where all the relatives arrive at the same time, it's just this chaotic whirlwind of them going around kissing everyone and hearing snippets of conversation. Immediately Clark's mom is like, you know, talking about some, you know, he's looking at, no, I think it's fine. I think it's fine. Whatever. And I think, oh my God, coming from a big Italian family, that scene gives me agita every time. And I think that's part of the reason this movie's so popular, because you can relate to it.
I get flashbacks from the same moment. Like, everyone in your normal immediate family just relaxing, hanging out on the couch, and then the doorbell rings and everyone just looks at each other. Like, here it comes.
Everything's about to change.
Brace yourself.
Gentle listener, if you didn't know, Anthony was Italian. He's recording this in a wife beater.
I run hot.
So he could show off all of his new tattoos.
Right. They're not new, but thank you.
No, I run hot.
No, I did ask for one for Christmas. So next time we record.
Fantastic. Oh man, moving on. So family comes in, hilarity, pandemonium, chaos ensues. I realized this go around, the timeline of this movie, because you have the advent calendar where they open the day every day, is really confusing for me. It feels
they're there
like
a long time.
Days, yeah. And the days feel really long too, which maybe sometimes the days can feel really long when you have family staying with you for a while. I get that, I guess. Ron, Brian, do you guys get the same?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel like it's more than just a day or two, but it is bizarre in how they only show like one meal, you know, together. And that, of course, is the Christmas meal. This movie always makes me wonder where everyone stayed, because I have no idea really how big it was inside. Because I think only one person got this place, and that was Russ, or not Rusty. Rusty had to sleep with his sister.
Rusty and Audrey, right, in the guest room.
Which, by the way, is one of the best lines when Audrey's complaining about sharing the room with him. And Ellen's like, well, I have to sleep with your father. We all make sacrifices.
As she struggles to light the cigarette.
And then she's immediately called out for smoking, by the way, which is really funny.
No.
I do love this shot of Grandpa up in Russ's bed staring at the babe on the ceiling, the poster on the ceiling.
Just a giant smile on his face.
Yes.
I hated even riding in a car with my brothers, because I was the oldest, and I hated when like they touched me at all. Like if our legs touched in the back of the car, it was definitely a get off me, you little worm moment every time. Don't get near me. I said, I'm Audrey in most parts of this movie at some point in my life. That's why she's so relatable.
So I have a question for you guys, because obviously a large part of this first half of the movie is everything decorating the house, the lights outside. Have you ever seen a house in real life like this? Like, obviously there are spectacular displays, but where every inch you run it up and down the facade of the house, have you ever seen one like this?
My old boss's house was like that, and he was Clark Griswold. He lived for Christmas every day of the year, and the background screen on his work computer was his house lit up just like that.
Oh, that's awesome.
All year round, that was his background. And every year they bought some new thing for the holidays, and like the HOA would complain about his house.
Is he hiring? Because he sounds awesome.
he's down. I don't even know if he still works at that company anymore. This was many jobs ago, but
there was this one house, and still is, in my parents' neighborhood where I grew up. And I swear you could not put another Christmas decoration on this lawn. And this acre is a half acre, right? Well, the property is a half acre. So, and it's one of those ranches. He's got everything covered from top to bottom. And as if that's not enough, there's every single 3D display inflatable you can possibly imagine out there. And I gotta believe that his meter is just spinning the same way as it is in Christmas Vacation every time his lights go up. But we also actually right down the road, the park ranger for one of the camps goes crazy. And to a point where it's almost kind of distracting coming down the road. And I always wonder if police are going to say something. But it's over the top. It is absolutely astounding. It's not one of those paid displays. It's just, here's all my lights and this is what I have. And to make everything that much better, the neighbor across the street simply made a sign that just says ditto and outlined it in and just has it planted right outside their house with an arrow to his.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
The neighborhood that my mom lives in and that I lived in for 10 years or whatever, it used to be Christmas Central. Like every house would be decorated. It would be one of those places that's a draw for the rest of the city. So like coming home in the afternoons from work or whatever, having to leave was always a huge pain because traffic would just be backed up for miles to turn into the subdivision and go crawling through all these streets. And it was literally like a whole, you know, five or six streets of Griswold type houses that were just like slammed as many lights as they could onto their houses. I mean, that's gone away now these days because, you know, everybody got old or sold or their house or whatever. But for a good 20 years, it was like that.
That's awesome.
Because even before we lived there, we would go there to drive around.
Yeah.
That's cool. Sounds great. I can't imagine being the Grinch that moves into the neighborhood and says, oh, we're not doing the lights.
Now, I do like, you see it online every year, that one display that went viral of like the guy who had the Grinch and it's just one strand of lights and he's,
yeah,
you know, stealing it. Like, I'm like, okay, very minimal, but very Christmassy. I'll take it.
Yeah.
Yeah, give him a lot of credit there because that's like the most minimalist type Christmas display you could do outside, but does show a fair amount of effort, I think.
Now, what about you, Anthony? I know you take decorating your Christmas tree very seriously. Are you the house or are you the balcony?
They pay people.
I do have lights around my balcony, but when I have a house, I do want to try it at least one year, like every inch, it's just like this thing. Movie.
Yep. If you got schnapps, we'll come help you.
You know what? Deal.
Yeah.
There used to be a house in this neighborhood, like one of these really big, like almost like mansion type houses, who went all out. He actually did both houses on either side of him because he did the three lawn display. They let him do it and he decorated all three and it was incredible. Wow. But yeah, he doesn't do it anymore because he's too old.
I mean, it's a lot of work. Not everyone can pay someone to do it for him.
Yeah.
There was a guy in the neighborhood over, in the town over, where he actually had it scheduled when his display would go off because it was done so well and so many people would show up that at one point he actually had like a collection can because of the amount, like people would come in. I think it was in Cranberry, New Jersey, but it was a big thing and it would go off at like every 15 minutes on the 15 minutes. It did this whole show. It was awesome. I can't imagine the level of effort he put into it, but it is a tremendous memory I have from being younger.
That's cool.
So to everyone out there that goes through the effort, there is a lot of people that do appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Man.
Well, let's talk about shopping. I know now, thank goodness, we have overnight shipping from Amazon and Walmart and most other online retailers. I cannot imagine going shopping at a mall days before Christmas.
Of course.
I've done it. With I've my done brother, it. We had to have some people come pick us up.
I've gone as late as Christmas Eve before.
Wow. Christmas Eve.
Wow.
I know someone who exclusively, I used to work with him and he every year did all of his Christmas shopping, all of it on Christmas Eve. And he had this whole thing set up. He'd go to the mall. He'd stop at every like food kiosk in the mall, basically as like his little break and then just go to the next store. And it's the entire Christmas Eve day was shopping. And that sounds exhausting to me.
Well, this specific Christmas Eve in question, I met Henry Winkler. Winkler. He was at the mall, and I embarrassed myself in front of him because he was walking toward me, and I'm walking toward him. And I'm like, "That's that guy." I couldn't remember his name. And he's passing me, so I go to say, "Hey." Like that, but it comes out, hey, like Fonzie. and he takes one look at me, literally looks me up and down, and he's like, yeah, I've never heard that one before. Then he walks past me. I'm like, oh.
Oh, no. Ron, what about you? Your Christmas shopping's probably already done.
Yeah, my Christmas shopping's been done for 2 or 3 months now.
Wow, that's amazing.
Well, I mean, if you've got, we just have one person to shop for, really. We just Maeve, so you know it's easy to pick things up on sale that look like she might like. So you know,
so what about Black Friday or Cyber Monday? or any of the other crazy deals, like a December to Remember.
Toyota-thon? This is a Toyota-thon household, sir. No. December to Remember. What are we, pagans? Come on. Reason for the season. No. I mean, we do get stuff from all that stuff, too, but it's usually not Christmas things. It's more like, well, you know, she can have this for her birthday in March, or, you know, we need a new hutch for the kitchen for the coffee stuff or whatever. So it's not specifically holiday related stuff. It's more just like, got to buy some crap that we're Americans.
I feel like you've only got maybe another year or two of this left, because when your daughter gets a little bit older, those commercials hit you pretty hard. Right. And they really come out. Those marketing companies are really good at it. And the Toys R Us, remember when not anymore, you know, RIP, but when Toys R Us used to send out their catalogs, I think Amazon does it now.
That's a highlight of the year as a
right.
kid.
But they're not sending it out 2 or 3 months before Christmas, right? That's like maybe a month and a half at most, I feel like. And what are you going to do then? You know, when you're all wrapped up, but they find something new that they want. Would you get it, or is it coming in for birthday?
I'm a sap, so I'd probably get it.
I would too.
And then whatever the Christmas thing is can become birthday.
There you go.
At least I'll be shopped ahead for some event or another.
It's a smart man. A smart move.
My niece has made it easy on everyone. She, since last year, creates, and she did one this year too, a What I Want for Christmas PowerPoint. So
that's awesome. Nice.
And it is thorough. She has links, she has prices, she has sizes. She goes, yeah, it's a lot of work, but I don't know, I like it. I said, yeah, because you get a lot of stuff from that PowerPoint.
Well,
she makes it so easy.
Me at 34 years old, kidless, I keep a Word document all year with things I want, with links and things I don't buy myself. I just give it to Sarah and my parents from November. List. And I'm like, just work your way down and coordinate with each other.
Please and thank you. Appreciate it.
I make it easy for people.
Yep. But the shopping is where we get the beautiful scene between Clark and Mary and Rusty walking in on them.
Yeah. And I feel like this scene's pretty powerful though, because even though Rusty and Clark don't have the one-on-one scene that they have in every other vacation movie, I think some of these small clips that we get kind of tell the whole story and how they are, you know, what their dynamic is. And I think it's a great one, you know, kind of, he walks up, he kind of gives him the side eye and Clark immediately kind of snaps right back to it, you know, but it wasn't anything bad, you know, he just kind of the deer in the headlights look.
Yep.
And again, Chevy Chase was such an amazing comedian. But besides the physical comedy he does in this movie, again, this whole little speech he gives talking to this woman, screwing up his words, it just comes so naturally. It's so funny. So well done.
Almost like he's done it before.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, what did he say to get her to show that there's no line?
Hey, ladies.
I mean, Clark has to have some kind of game in order to pull an Ellen Griswold type. So
it's true. I mean, he does have a sweet jab, bonus or no bonus, as a food additive chemical engineer or something like that.
Which, yeah, let's go back to his job for a second. The beginning, we never even mention, or it's not even the beginning. I don't know. I get confused by the days and the timeline here, but when everybody's leaving the gifts for their boss,
yes.
he has a million of the same shaped packages.
Yeah.
But then as well, Clark trying to kiss up to the big wigs, and he's like, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, kiss my ass, kiss your ass. So kiss funny. Like, yep.
And he had the Tasmanian dog. I remember those.
Yep.
I think my Aunt Karen had one. Everyone had one. Someone had the Tasmanian devil mug.
The Tasmanian devil in the 80s and 90s used to be like on everything, like jerseys, t-shirts. Like, he was popular.
Especially when he was able to be thugged out for like airbrush shirts at the flea market.
or the shore.
Yeah. Or wearing the or wearing the backwards clothing like Crisscross.
I was just trying to figure out how much we think Clark Griswold made as a food chemist to have that house and a stay-at-home wife in the suburbs of Chicago in 1989. And so far,
it was 30% more than last year. That's all that matters.
Yeah. It was definitely six figures then, and equivalent to at least $500,000 now is kind of the general consensus. Hmm. Which just doesn't feel like enough.
Which is wild, because if you look up what food chemists make now, it's like $50,000 a year. They make, you know, a decent enough living for that kind of job. But, and I know you're going to get more being in the Chicago market, but like, is he like some sort of like secret vice president of food additives or something?
Clearly not. He wasn't in that important party.
But look at his office, though. He's got a pretty good office.
It's a sweet office, and he definitely works in the city.
All fathers of Christmas movies that live in Chicago all work at the same secret company and just make a ton.
They like really Culkin's do.
Home Alone. Yeah.
Scott Calvin of the Santa Claus. Yeah. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That's right. And they're all decked out in like Burberry and...
Yeah.
So what you're saying is he works for the mob? Because that was my understanding of what Kevin's dad did in Home Alone.
I could see that. Yeah, that's true. Because that is unclear what Kevin's dad does.
Like he is Tony Soprano's associate on The Sopranos.
Like, what kind of food additives is Clark making? Poison for the Purple Gang?
He mentioned cereal in one of them. I thought there was something about
it's a varnish on cereal
non-nutrient cereal varnish. It's a semi-permeable osmotic membrane. something.
I love that he called it a varnish.
Yeah, that's what always sticks with me. It's not a cereal additive. It's not cereal coating. It's cereal varnish.
Like, right. Which sounds like he's just spraying like poly on the cereal to make it shiny.
Basically. Yeah, is there like some sort of like shellac for corn nuts or something that he's
I guess this is as good a time as any to say that's probably my least favorite scene in the movie.
The
sledding scene with the where he's polishing it with the food varnish, and then
it's not zipping. The food varnish. It's some sort of industrial lubricant.
Yeah. Well, whatever it is. That's the most unbelievable scene in the movie.
Well, we can't get, I don't disagree with you, but we can't get to that scene before we get to Cousin Eddie showing up.
Because that's true.
Eddie shows up very shortly after shopping, I guess, or after, it's after,
after Clark. The lights.
Yeah.
He finally gets the lights on.
Yep.
Which, who doesn't remember that? Like, I remember that being a struggle with my dad. There was always that one light switch in the garage that had to be flipped up or down.
Yep. Everywhere. Well, we've started finally, after being in here over a year, we've figured out where most of them go. But there's always a rogue light switch, and you're just unsure.
Yeah, it must be
Christmas lights, huh?
Yeah. No.
It must be a fun game.
Over the place.
Electricians play. To torture people, doing it on purpose.
Having been an electrician at one point in time, yes, it's definitely a game. wouldn't that be funny if it was? We didn't really, but that's hilarious. Yeah, so then Cousin Eddie shows up in all of his glory.
During Clark's happiest moment in the film, by the way. He is crying tears of joy. How good the house looks. And he's just going around hugging everyone. And then Cousin Eddie shows up and pops that balloon.
Oh. And Snots and Rocky. Oh, man. His performance in this movie, Cousin Eddie specifically, was better than any of the other ones. And we mentioned earlier, we tried Christmas Vacation 2, but it just wasn't.
You can't do it.
We ended up stopping.
He like, can't be the main character.
No, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. But he's so, so good as Clark's, I don't know what you would call it.
Cousin-in-law.
Cousin-in-law. Frenemy.
Comic foil.
Comic foil, yes. He does so great as Clark's comic foil.
I think what makes him work so well is the fact that he, yes, he's dumb, and that makes him funny, but he is so good-natured at heart. Like, he is not trying to ruin anyone's day or anything. He is just so good-natured and innocent at heart, and that's what makes him so lovable, on top of just being laugh-out-loud funny and ridiculous.
Yeah, I got to say, I think one of my, for whatever reason, you know, that scene where they're asking, where they say they have more room inside, and they insist, you know, no, we're good. But, you know, maybe Catherine and I will stay out here in the RV. And, you know, he says, don't forget to get the rubber sheets out.
And the gerbil.
And the gerbil.
Cousin Eddie has some of the best lines right before your favorite scene, Anthony, when they go sledding. And he says, nah, Clark, it's that metal plate in my head.
I'm not going to go sliding down the ground with nothing between my brain and the ground but a piece of government plastic.
Every time Catherine turns on the microwave, I piss myself and forget who I am for 3 days. I think that's one of my dad's favorite quotes of the movie. He says that a lot.
I love the Clark is just as funny bouncing off of him, where he's like, can I get you anything? Can I drive you out in the middle of nowhere and leave you for dead? Whatever he says. It's just so funny.
Yeah. There's always the one. There's always one person that just is totally aloof and makes themselves right at home and like, but like two at home, like they're at home is not your at home. Like Eddie lives in a van and he does not treat his home the same way.
The quote I use year round always is, you serious, Clark? Whenever.
And that's just so perfectly delivered. Like, say what you want to about what Randy Quaid's been up to in recent years. This is just, he knows exactly what he's doing in this role, and he just crushes every little scene, every little interaction. If you could just see him in the background, he's doing something, and it's just so perfect.
Oh my gosh. When he is breaking the little wooden thing and walking around the living room and just wreaking the tiniest of havocs all over the place. And then he just dunks the eggnog mug into the eggnog. He's wearing that white turtleneck sweater, or the white V-neck sweater with the, what do you call it? The fake turtleneck, but it's black. So you can see the black outline underneath the sweater.
Which, that is a joke I never noticed until this movie started to show up in HD.
Yeah.
So when we went from VHS to like actual picture quality, I saw that joke for the very first time and just laughed for 5 minutes.
I remember that too. Gosh, that's
having worn one of those Dickies in elementary school, because my mom thought turtlenecks looked good under like button downs.
We had them. I gotta say, I've worn them. But it was like for when we went sledding, I think. Like when we were playing outside younger in the snow, we used to have it as just like that, you know, so you didn't have to wear a scarf.
Oh, but I wore mine for picture day.
That's exactly different.
Turtlenecks were, oh no, it wasn't different. Turtlenecks were very in at the time.
Yep. This is a mock turtleneck.
I know. I know. Don't look at me.
That's a completely different thing. The thing I wore was just like the torso part with no sleeves.
Just from here up. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
It went a little bit lower than Eddie's because it was like a full length thing that you could like tuck into your pants. Mm-hmm. But same deal.
That makes sense, you know, because I feel like the Eddie thing would get bunched up pretty easily.
Interesting.
It's amazing that they didn't.
Mine was not. Mine was like cut off, like just below the pecs.
No, I had regular turtlenecks. I had regular turtlenecks and the Eddie Dickey things. I can't remember what I wore them under, though. I mean, it was probably a sweater vest or something
nerdy. Real sweet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure. With my stirrup pants and three pairs of scrunched up socks and, you know. Yeah. Yep.
I do have to say here for Chevy Chase, you guys are very complimentary on Randy Quaid and every scene he's in the background, he's doing something. Same could be said for Chevy Chase. Every single thing he does in this movie, he makes funny. All he has to do is look at the camera a certain way. It's hilarious. One of my favorite scenes in this film, not to jump ahead, Lindsay, is the Christmas dinner scene where they're all sitting around eating silently in a less gifted actor's hands. Yeah, exactly. The chewing he does cracks me up. If it was a less gifted actor, that could failed miserably. But just the way he does that and like shakes his head and then hurried and dips it in the wine and then like, it's amazing. The guy's a comedic genius. He could be the biggest asshole in the world, which by all accounts he is, but he's a genius.
Oh, he's not Tim Allen. He's got a little ways to go. He did, as far as I know, Chevy Chase has never ratted on his coke dealer. So,
yeah, that's just rude.
Yeah, I mean, you could be a terrible person, but don't be a narc.
Snitches get stitches. Everybody knows that.
Or if you're Tim Allen, snitches get to be Santa Claus when people forget that he had that terrible coke mustache.
Well, this is the Chevy Chase show, not the Tim Allen show.
Oh, the less said about the actual about Chevy Chase show, the better. Dealer.
So Eddie's kids not having Christmas gifts. First of all, Eddie's kids are like the, I don't,
they look like they're out of a Stephen King movie.
Yeah. But they're like a cute ugly or an ugly cute. I don't know which one comes first, but they're so sweet. And the girl, Ruby Sue, is so, I don't know, just cute.
She's innocent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's innocent. I love the shit and bricks line. And then he goes, shouldn't say that word. Sorry. Shit and rocks. Cracks me up every time.
Well, his kids really add a heart to this movie too. I mean, there's a lot of heart throughout this movie, but the scene where Clark and Ellen are in bed talking about how Eddie doesn't have the money to get gifts for the kids and Santa's not going to come for them. And there's no hesitation on their part to help them out and make their Christmas special. And that really just shows for all his wacky antics that Clark Griswold is a good guy.
Yeah. Even knowing that his bonus may not be coming and he may be in the doghouse and in debt up to his ears, he's still willing to try to make these kids' Christmas.
Well, it all ties,
as good as he can.
It's because it all ties back to what we were seeing in the beginning, right? I mean, that's who his character is. He's the ultimate version or form of whatever he's trying to become. So whether it's the ultimate vacation that he's trying to deliver to go into Wally World or traveling through Europe because they won the 2-week vacation. I think that's what in his head, this Christmas vacation is every kid has to have a perfect Christmas. And you cannot have that without having something under the tree for him. And I think that's just kind of tying back into it. You know, he wants the whole family there. Even when everything goes south, no one's leaving. We're all in this together. You know, that's his outlook on this. And I think it just ties into the fact that his character is supposed to be the ultimate American family man, I think is what he's supposed to be. And he does a great job illustrating that.
Mm-hmm.
He wants the Christmas for his kids and his family as a whole to be as special as it was for him growing up, which we see it was. He says that to his dad later on, "I wanted to make it this Christmas as good as the ones you gave me." Mm-hmm. You see it in the attic when he gets locked in the attic and he has a turban on his head and he's sobbing at the old family movies, which another brilliant scene. But yeah, that's a great point. He is the ultimate American family man.
Yeah. And then his dad rolls in with the line, "Well, I had a lot of help from Jack Daniels." And it's true, because the Christmases we remember as kids are not the same Christmases that our parents remember when we were kids. Mm-hmm. We had very different experiences. So, and I mean, there's your example right there. I bet every kid in that Griswold house is going to remember that Christmas as, well, maybe not a perfect Christmas, but I bet Eddie's kids will remember it as a perfect Christmas.
Yeah.
And I guess a guy running around with a chainsaw on Christmas wouldn't be that out of character for the life experiences that Eddie's kids would grow up with.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I love as well, speaking of Eddie, I love when Clark makes the offer to get his kids gifts and help mm-hmm. him out a bit. The first thing Eddie does is dump a 60-pound bag of dog food into Clark's shopping cart.
It was three of them, wasn't it?
it was like three of them.
Like every different kind of dog food.
And the best part was the last and biggest bag of dog food was dropped right on top of a box of light bulbs.
Oh my gosh. Oh, sweet, sweet Snots, who gets into the trash at dinner, doesn't eat the cat, but the cat meets its own demise.
Electrocutes itself, which they sell that now on Amazon. Like,
yes, I've seen that.
It's to hide the cord on the Christmas tree going into the wall, so you would lay the flat cat down on the floor.
I luckily have never had a cat chew on wires, but I do know that that is a thing that some of them like to do. It's a real hazard that I think some families face.
My cats have never chewed on wires, but one of my cats did knock down the Christmas tree one year, climbing up into it.
Your cat and knocked down the Christmas tree?
He climbed into it, or he jumped into it, and it teetered, and he just saw him jump out scared, and in slow-mo, the Christmas tree fell. I have a giant leg lamp from A Christmas Story, too. It missed it by, like, an inch. I thought I was going to reenact the scene from A Christmas Story where the lamp breaks.
Well, as long as you have glue at home, though, I think you're okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Aunt Bethany is one of my favorite characters in the whole movie. And she has two of my, well, I have a lot of favorite lines in the movie, but one of the lines that makes me giggle every single time I hear it is when she and Uncle Lewis shows up and Clark is helping her up the stairs and she goes, "Don't throw me down, Clark." I can't handle it every time. I just like bust out. It's still my favorite. It's the best line in the whole movie. It's so weird.
I love watching Uncle Lewis get frustrated with her.
Well, talk about a guy who's cornered the market on playing that sort of character. William Hickey, who did that both in this movie and in A Nightmare Before Christmas, where he played the cantankerous, mean-spirited old man who may or may not be immune to poison in this one too, because he seems to, you know, have survived Bethany's cooking.
The two of them are just so funny together when Bethany's like, "Oh dear, did I break wind?" And he's like, "Jesus, Bethany, did you clear out the room?
You couldn't hear a dump truck driving through a nitroglycerin plant." Did you guys think this podcast was just going to be quoting the movie? Because I did.
Mostly, yeah.
Yeah.
It's impossible not to.
I know.
I'm waiting to see who does the speech, does the breakdown, the mental breakdown speech.
Oh, man. I don't know it well. I don't know it well enough.
If it's anyone here, it's going to be Ron.
Yeah, it's got
to
be Ron.
I'd have to pull it up for reference because I did it backwards because I'm a like I said, as previously established, I'm unprepared and lazy.
I know. Hallelujah. Holy shit. Where's the Tylenol?
Where's the Tylenol?
My dad can do it all verbatim, and I've heard him do it many times all verbatim.
I mean, I think it was you, Ron, who said at the beginning of the show, like, it is one of the all-time greatest breakdowns in film history, that monologue. And I can't imagine being on set when he's doing it and not bursting out laughing.
I wonder how many takes that took him to do it. I can't imagine.
And not have anyone break when he's doing it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, at least the camera angle, you can't.
They don't always show everybody.
Yeah, yeah. You can kind of take that out a little bit. But that is a man. That is a man on his last straw.
Fix the newel post, honey. That's down with the chainsaw.
That'd be you.
You know, I said it was so fixed. Lynn said it was not.
So that's not count. That does not count as fixing it.
It was wobbly before, and now it's not.
So which breakdown do we want to do? Do you want to do the Frank Shirley one, or do you want to do the nobody's this fun old fashioned family Christmas, best known by me from the opening credits of Tis the Podcast?
Thank you. Thanks. Nice shout out. They're both great. Choose one, Ron. Do it.
Okay. I didn't bring water with me, but we'll suffer through this, okay? Where do you think you're going? Nobody's leaving. Nobody's walking out on this fun old-fashioned family Christmas. No, no. We're all in this together. This is a full-blown four-alarm holiday emergency here. We're going to press on, and we're going to have the happiest Christmas since Bing Crosby tap danced with Danny fucking K. And when Santa squeezes his fat white ass down that chimney tonight, he's going to find the jolliest bunch of assholes this side of the nut house. There
you go. Well done. Perfect.
The Danny fucking K line. It gets me every time, too. That's up there with Aunt Bethany's.
His other speech, though, when he's ranting that he wants Shirley brought to him, wrapped in a bow, so he could tell him what he thinks of him. Speaking of Randy Quaid's acting, the glint in his eye, you could just see his eyes light up during the speech. It is fantastic.
He's been trying to think of the perfect gift for Clark that he can afford.
Mm-hmm.
And there it is. There it is right in front of him in his blue leisure suit. He was a beastly man in a blue leisure suit.
But how exciting was it to see that dumpy old RV pulling out of that house driveway, you know, without ever going into saying what happened, just knowing exactly what happened as a viewer, pulled into this ratty old thing, obviously forced himself in and then just took him. That was it. Just wrapped him up, threw him in this thing and took off.
Mm-hmm.
And figure the RV, we've totally blew past one of the most iconic quotes in this movie. Shitter's full.
Yeah. Oh, and we are remiss to also blow past the, why is the carpet all wet, Todd?
I don't know, Marco.
I mean, speaking of physical acting, when the lights keep going on and off and they keep tripping over one another and falling down the stairs.
Oh, man. Julia Louis-Dreyfus. What, so great. And then she gets attacked by the squirrel, I guess, and the dog.
And the dog, yeah.
And then just punches old what's-his-face right in the face.
Todd,
yeah. Yeah, that guy. The name I just said.
Yeah, he's the one.
I think, like, the perfect thing that encompasses the whole Cousin Eddie thing is after Clark unwraps the Jelly of the Month Club certificate in lieu of his bonus, where he's like, Clark, that's the gift that keeps giving the whole year. Because it's definitely a character for him to, like, he's clearly been making the best of a bad situation for quite some time and not letting it get to him. So it's only natural that Eddie would see that.
Look on the bright side. Oh, that's so sweet. I didn't even think about that. That's just, that line always felt kind of like, and I know he didn't mean it, but felt kind of like salt in an open wound. You know, when someone's trying to pick you up, but you're like, I can't right now. I have no interest in being happy or looking on the bright side. But great point. Cousin Eddie's had to make the best of bad situations for a while.
Heart bigger than a brain.
Yep. Yes, sir.
I mean, his daughter is in the clinic getting cured off the wild turkey, and his son is about to embark on his career barking for the yak woman.
But Ruby Sue isn't cross-eyed anymore.
Fell down a well, eyes became crossed. Or kicked by a mule, eyes became crossed. Fell down a well, go back to normal.
I don't know.
When Cousin Eddie says the whole thing about the piece of government plastic protecting his brain, whatever, I love Chevy Chase's just very offhand comment. Do you really think that would make a difference, Eddie?
And then Eddie's whole explanation about that's where the part is. And if it gets dented, my hair just ain't going to look right.
Right. If I get a dent, that just ain't going to look right. My hair isn't going to look right.
Hair going to look right. And that just won't look right.
Over here, it's...
Sorry, Lindsay. You look like you were going to say... I was just going to say, we've talked a lot about the chemistry between Chevy Chase and Randy Quaid, but the chemistry between Chevy Chase and Beverly D'Angelo is like off the charts too. And she has said in multiple interviews over the years that like he was like her second. They were like each other's soulmates outside of their marriage. Like they truly loved each other, which I think is cute, but I mean, every scene they're in together is magic, but I love when the SWAT breaks in and they tell him to the SWAT team breaks in, they tell him to freeze, and his hands are in the air and she's like has her hand on his crotch, like, and they're just frozen like that.
Welcome to our home.
And then she shakes his hand and puts it right back.
Yeah.
I love their chemistry in all of the movies. I think they're so great together. And I think we mentioned it in our European vacation podcast. Go back and give it a listen, folks, if you haven't yet, that she gave him the nickname Sparky, and then it just stuck through all of the movies. And she still very adoringly and lovingly calls him Sparky.
Yeah, I love that.
So cute. Well, then he does end up getting his Christmas bonus. Not all of us have been so lucky in similar situations.
I love that even his wife was like, oh, you didn't. You didn't give them their bonuses.
And the cop, too. Oh, if I had a garden hose.
Yeah. I'd beat you so.
So he got it.
And the whole best thing about that cop is just the look of disgust that goes across his face when he hears the news. Like, we kicked in the wrong guy's door. We should have just left him to his fate.
Jerk.
Cousin Eddie dragging him into the room saying, get ready for some kissing.
I like the kick in the butt on the way in.
I like the giant Toyotathon bow wrapped around him.
I love that we, to your point, Brian, what you said earlier, that we did not see what happened at the house, how Eddie got him out. So your mind just makes up the most ridiculous scenarios how he kidnapped this man.
Yeah, it was just a win for the little guy, you know, because we've all been in that position. And just to see something like that happen just makes you feel so good.
Yeah.
Just fantastic.
But not all of us have a dumb cousin with a heart of gold to make bad decisions like that for us.
No, that's true.
But Clark Griswold does. And it worked out. And he got his bonus. Again, we should all be so lucky. I wish every CEO watched this movie.
And that's kind of like the through line for all of these movies, right? Things go terribly, but in the end, it works out okay for Clark and his family because they've got each other.
Well, one of my favorite lines in the movie is the very last one where everything's worked out and Clark is just standing in front of his house and he takes a big sigh and he's like, I did it. Like, he succeeded in throwing the big family Christmas. He got his bonus and he can go to bed happy.
Yeah. What a great big first Christmas lesson learned for Clark. Do you think he threw another big Christmas the next year?
100%. This is not a guy who learns from his mistakes.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Oh, well.
All I know is, did you guys hear that supposedly they want to bring, obviously it would have to be a different cast, but National Lampoon to Broadway?
No.
And they would call it National Lampoon's New York Vacation, and that would be the plot of the play.
Oh. And,
yep.
That's Anthony, fun. If that happens, we're going, right?
Hell yes, we are. Yes, okay. We are.
We're in.
Yep.
All right. Well,
and then Ron, you could come up too.
Yeah. Hey,
sounds great. I'm game.
Come on. Come on out, Ron. A big happy podcast family reuniting for national uniting for the first time ever.
For a family
in person.
Vacation.
For yep. a podcast family vacation. All right, guys. Well, that brings us to the end. I think it's time for popcorn ratings. Everybody knows mine. So.
No, I don't.
I'll start then. I am going to give this the refillable popcorn bowl at the Alamo with extra butter and extra, well, maybe not extra salt. That's not really my jam. But if it's yours, extra salt. And I'd refill it like twice or three times, as many times as my stomach could handle. This is one of the most perfect movies, in my opinion. I smile super hard and laugh even harder every time I watch it. And even talking about it, I'm like, my face hurts. I'm going to go to bed and I'm going to wake up tomorrow. My whole face is going to hurt. I think it's beautiful. The actors play so well off of each other. The characters are all so relatable. The whole situation is so relatable. It's the best Christmas movie ever. I'll watch it the whole year round. And I love it. Can't recommend it enough. If you haven't watched it, seriously, what's wrong with you? Just go watch it and then watch it again.
Copy and paste everything you said. It's definitely the refillable popcorn with all the trimmings, Alamo popcorn, as you said. Love that place. But this is one of those movies, every single time it's on TV during the season, which is often, if I come across it, I don't care what part of the movie it's on, I will leave it on and watch it from that point onward till the end. I cannot get enough of it. Like you said, it's one of the most perfect movies ever. It's one of the best comedies ever. And yeah, it's fantastic. Before I kick it over to Brian and Ron, though, I do want to say we didn't mention at all the opening number, which is iconic. The animated opening sequence, Christmas Vacation.
Gosh, you're right.
With Santa going down the house. And
That's one of my favorite parts, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And the beginning where the moment those notes kick in, you just smile and you don't stop smiling the whole movie.
Yeah.
And it's a shame they never released that version to buy on iTunes. I check all the time.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Sad. Also, just a quick note. I love how all of our pets have tried to inject themselves into this podcast at some point during the show.
I mean, they know it's a family, it's a podcast about family reunion, so they're family.
Yep.
It's not a film strip recording with me involved. Jasper, Carlisle, or both don't do something stupid during the middle of it, so.
Yep. All right, who's next, Ron or Brian?
Ron, what's the rating? What are you giving it?
Extra large popcorn, that's a dumb question. This movie is awesome. It's the perfect Christmas movie. It's a modern classic for a reason. I can't add anything that anybody else has to anything anybody else has said. Extra large popcorn, throw in some seasonally appropriate white chocolate and maybe some crushed up candy cane sprinkles on top of the white chocolate while it's still warm so they stick. Make some delicious white chocolate peppermint popcorn balls, which if you've never actually done that, I'd totally recommend. Drizzle a little white chocolate in your popcorn and it makes little fun popcorn clumps, especially when it's still the popcorn's still hot and buttery and good. So
follow us for more popcorn tips.
Yeah, you gotta dump the box of Nestle Crunchy Bunch into the popcorn so you get the sweet and the savory. It's really good. That.
Oh, it's yeah, good.
It's really good.
I've never done it with the Nestle, but I've done it with a bunch of crunch, but I've done it with snow caps. I've done it with Goobers.
Oh, okay. I'll take it. Same concept.
And that leaves Brian.
Well, Ron only gave it an extra large, so I'm going to have to give it an extra, extra large because I actually like this movie. But, you know, I would say an XXL size.
Oh.
So I don't have to get up because that's just inconvenient. No one wants to have to get up in the middle of the movie for refills. You missed three parts of the movie with your
first
refills.
First of all, they refill it Alamo. You don't get up to get refills at the Alamo.
This is also a Regal Cinema extra, extra large because this is not a bougie film. This is not a bougie family. So why would I want to enjoy this in a bougie movie theater? It just doesn't make sense. I want it in a regular American average theater and just have a great experience. And every piece of popcorn that you pick up has the perfect amount of butter on it. Not overdone, not missing any. It's just every handful is like the perfect handful of popcorn. Cause I don't eat it one at one. You know, I'm a stuffer. I just grab it, stuff.
I'm whatever, the same way.
Whatever comes down, it goes right back into the bucket. You just recycle and put it right back up. That's efficiency. That's the perfect bucket of popcorn. You are all set. The movies to me don't really get much better than this.
I want to
Brian, I like your style. I like your style.
We saw this movie at the Alamo, though.
They weren't showing it at the other theater. If they did, that's where we would have gone.
All right. Well, I think that's a winner across the board.
Say so.
All right. Let's start with Ron. Where can everybody find you outside of Filmstrip Podcast?
You can find me still occasionally running the show's X account. Is it X or X.com? Well, whatever Twitter.
Yeah.
The artist formerly known as Twitter. I'm still on that account every once in a while when I feel like logging into social media. You can still read a bunch of my past work at Den of Geek, including my vociferous defense of the fact that Lethal Weapon is a Christmas movie and is more of a Christmas movie than Die Hard. I wrote that one last year. So we'll go read that one again and pop on to tell me I'm wrong 1 year later.
Awesome. Anthony,
I will definitely do that. Again, Tis the Podcast. That's my other show. That's my show. I host it with Tom and Julia, my two co-hosts. You can get to our podcast and all our social media feeds by going to linktree.com/Tis the Podcast. And you'll hear Ron and Lindsay there. So,
yes. And Jay too on occasion.
And Jay for sure. Yep.
All right. Well, that's it, folks. If you like the show, you can follow the show's social media at Filmstrip Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. There you'll find announcements about upcoming shows and a link to our Letterboxd page, which contains our entire list of reviews. Go to filmstrippodcast.com to link to our anchor.fm distribution site, where you can find your podcast platform of choice, including Apple, Spotify, Google, etc. Please share the show. And if you can, leave us a positive review. It helps other people find the podcast. For Ron, Brian, and Anthony, I'm Lindsay. Thank you for listening to Filmstrip, and happy holidays to you and yours.
Merry Christmas.
It's that time. Christmas time
is here. Dun, 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 dun.
Thank you for listening to Filmstrip. You can find more episodes on our website, filmstrippodcast.com. The Filmstrip theme music is produced and performed by Frozen Lake 121. All content used or discussed in these podcast episodes is the property of the respective owners and used under the Fair Use Act, Section 504(c)(2), Title 17.